Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot. And we're talking to you from our new house, which is very tenderly shading our motorhome, which is back from getting a small facelift.
let's not talk about that too much.
Those of you who pay really close attention, because we kind of minimized it on our Alaska trip, we had some body damage, which didn't affect the trip very much, but ruined the perfect beauty of our motorhome. So here at the Great Outdoors, we are lucky to have a very complete RV repair facility, including painting, which we had never done body work with them before,
right.
And they did a beautiful job, and we're happy to report that our insurance, Progressive, paid for it as promised, and it was amazingly hassle-free.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the overall service that we got on all ends, and one of the nice things about this particular RV repair facility is that they do it all. They'll do motorhome chassis, they'll do motorhome body work.
But lest we wander too far afield, we have not said that this is our podcast for March 2026.
Oh, the details.
Episode 251, and we are talking to you, as I said, from our new house in Titusville at the Great Outdoors.
On the short month of February, we have March comes up here really in a hurry when you only have 4 weeks in the month. But that's okay. We're going to be here for a little bit while longer, and we are, frankly, at leisure these few weeks since we've been home.
You feel at leisure? I feel like you've been working really hard.
Well, we've been, yes, but it's been interesting projects that are not really all that time sensitive.
And you're doing them as time allows, and when you get sick of doing it, you stop doing it.
And I just put in a new faucet in the bathroom.
Wonderful.
Well, we have a 30-year-old house, and things are, well, they're in good shape, but they also
they've been used for 30 years.
Yeah.
And some things that the previous owner did, we loved, and some things that they did, we wanted to replace or didn't function properly, and we're gradually chipping away at that stuff this year. Consequently, we don't have too many travel details to talk to you about this time, which is kind of unusual for us.
Yeah. As RVers, it's nice to have one-stop shopping for getting your RV fixed. And this place called Eagle's Pride in Titusville, Florida, does it all. They will do tune-ups. They will do gas and diesel. They will do fifth wheels. They will do travel trailers. They will put in air conditioners. They will put in refrigerators. They will take care of your slides. And, as we found out, they also do body work. So they have a full bay where they do painting, just a single bay, so they can't do a lot of it. But our rig took 17 days to finish.
Some of the days were too cold to paint. That's another topic here in Florida.
Another topic here is the cold weather in Florida, which we're experiencing as we speak, plus we've had some very record cold. But anyway, the Eagle's Pride in Titusville, Florida is a one-stop shop for all of your repairs. And I think it's open to the outside, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you need to be staying here, but certainly during the season, which February and March are the season, they are very, very busy and booked up. And we made the reservation before we went to Mexico,
yes,
to make sure that we could get it done in a timely way. But if you are in this area and can leave your rig here while they're working on it, I'm sure that they would be happy to take your money and fix whatever is ailing you.
It ain't cheap. We were very pleased with the service that Progressive gave us. We had this accident in August.
July.
And I didn't report it until we got here in November, made a claim, and because they interrupted our trip and it was in Alaska, they understood that there was no real urgency to get it done.
But that was their first question. Yeah, well, why are you calling us now?
About an accident in July. And, of course, it was a single vehicle accident. Thank you, Ken. But the bottom line is that the agent came out, did a survey of the damage, and They work with Eagles Pride regularly, and so Progressive spent about $15,000 on this, and we paid only our deductible, which was quite a relief on our part.
You bet.
Because that's... So we're happy with Progressive.
And we're happy to have a nice place to put it now that it's so beautiful once again. We had some details left over when we were talking to you about our adventures in Mexico. It was a two-parter. We told you pretty much about the butterfly part of it, and we want to say that that part was well-timed in that the butterflies were there where we expected them to be, doing what we expected to see them doing. But then we did the whale-watching part to the Gulf of Cortez, where the mother whales come and give birth to their young in warmish water and protected bays. That part was quite disappointing to us, but it was not to the other people that were on our boat. I don't think. I heard a lot of people raving about it. But we kept...
Are we too experienced or what?
We kept comparing it to the experience that we had when we were here on a caravan with our RV, where we saw many more whales. We only saw one baby, I think, on this one. And you would see an occasional tail or an occasional flipper.
And a lot of breathing.
Yeah, a lot of spouts. Ho-hum.
Ho-hum. I do want to say that on our last podcast, we had to do it mid-cruise because we arrived home on February 1st, and I had to have the podcast finished. So we are kind of following up on some of the comments that we may have made on the last trip. But now that we have perspective of a month at home, we can tell you these things, that it's very important to know when the animals are doing what you're expecting them to be doing.
And we assumed that since they were offering a trip to see that stuff during this time, that that must be a good season, a good time in the season. And maybe it normally is. I mean, the world, the weather is so changeable these days, and it's animals. It's not Disney World where they have them scheduled to command.
But there was only one mother and calf in the vicinity. And the last time we were there, there were... 10 or 20, but that was 20 years ago. And there could be some changes. I don't know, but the pictures they show you in the brochures are very different than the experience that we had. And this was on the Lindblad Venture, which was a nice small ship. We enjoyed it.
We were surprised to find the owner on board. We're not sure how much he does that. He brought his young family and pretty much participated in all the activities that we did, which was kind of a surprise. And I thought that was a nice thing for him to be doing. If you're going to supervise a large company, you have a lot of people working for you who tell you stuff, but sometimes if you can see it with your own eyeballs, that's the best. And I think that's what he was doing.
Laredo is a very small port, Laredo in the Baja. We flew into Baja from Mexico City. We were surprised to learn that the ship didn't leave from there.
And we only had one flight to choose from that day.
But regardless of that,
it's small.
It's a small airport, and it has no port for ships, even as small as this ship is. So we had to drive like 30 minutes down the coast in order to find a pier where the ship could dock. We are on our final day on the ship.
On the water.
And they say, oh, disembarkation's going to be very disrupted because
we have to do everything by zodiac, including your luggage and all the provisions that we are bringing on board for the people who come after you, all the garbage that you generated while you were here.
If you have done a cruise, you know that on turnaround days, the ships are always docked because they have so much land stuff to do, she says, all the provisions.
They could hardly believe it themselves. They had a contract with whoever
the pier
administers the port facility there, which has two places to dock. And they told us that both places were taken up by Mark Zuckerberg of Meta Facebook fame, who had not only had his beautiful yacht there, but he had another yacht that he uses for the people who work on his yacht.
It's called a tender, but it's huge.
My God.
It's as big as any cruise ship. So the cruise ship dock there is fairly small. I mean,
adequate for us.
Adequate for us, and you could bring a bus down to it and you know, to pick up the passengers, and you could bring a semi down with pallets of food and that sort of stuff, which is what they've been doing. And this ship comes every week and does this
all winter season,
and they had a contract until.
Somebody gave them a better offer.
Under the table payment.
But luckily, perhaps because our owner was on board, he made some phone calls, and lo and behold, as we neared the dock, the support ship for the Zuckerberg palatial cruise ships pulled away, and we had a chance to dock,
which
were very grateful because they had a contract.
Yeah, well, so it ended up being a smooth disembarkation, but boy, they were worried, and we found out about it literally hours before it was supposed to dock.
Well, maybe they had been working on it all week.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And they didn't want to tell us.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, and they didn't want to tell us about something that wasn't going to happen. But we had actual tender numbers, and we're not talking about big ship tenders. We're talking about
Zodiacs.
10-passenger Zodiacs. All of your luggage. We couldn't imagine that. And the pier was just not designed for Zodiac arrivals. And, of course, most of our Zodiac, we didn't dock any place on the whole week, and all of our Zodiac landings were
wet.
And you're not going to want to get wet if you're going to be...
Which means you get in and out of the boat from standing in the water.
You jump over the pontoon.
Or in my case, kind of grope around. People give you a hand, and eventually your butt is over the side.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so that trip turned out to be well. We did lots of nice photography. We did beach combing. And
the Sea of Cortez is a beautiful... place.
But we didn't end up doing any snorkeling. It was just too cold.
Too cold.
And we've done snorkeling in some of the best places in the world.
Many people did snorkel.
Yes.
But when we saw
their video,
yeah, the water
wasn't that clear.
It looked kind of stirred up and murky.
Well, and one of the reasons for that is because that's what the whales eat, is all that krill and stuff, murk. The stuff that makes the water murky is the food that the whales and other mammals eat while they are there. And that's why they're there, is to bulk up. So the murk wasn't because of any sort of pollution. It was just sea life, I guess.
Final adventure in Mexico that we want to report to you on has to do with carrying around old money.
We are old and we have old money.
When we first started traveling, when we would leave a country, we would have some money left. It's hard to guess exactly how much you need. And we would do things like buy chocolate bars and snacks and spend the money that way. And after a while, since we traveled, we thought, well, that's a waste. It's really nice to enter a country with some of their money already. If you try to buy currency at home, they really charge you outrageous rates. And sometimes you land in a place where there's no exchange office or the banks are only open 2 hours a day. It's nice to have some good hard cash in your pocket when you arrive. And because I am the anal person that I am, I have little Ziploc bags, well organized, where I keep all of our old currencies. And so it was time to go. Sure.
Do you have lira?
Sure. Well, no, the lira I took out because you can't use those anymore.
Well, I'm talking about francs.
I have Tahitian francs.
Oh, Tahitian francs.
Yeah.
Do we have
European
francs?
You have to be specific.
French francs.
No, I made it. I decoupaged a box with those old notes.
We are now using money for decoupage.
But as far as we knew, the pesos that we had in our hand, it was close to $100 worth.
Yeah. Well, when we left here, we talked about whether we should go and get some pesos or even at the airport.
And we checked the rates and we counted what we had. And we had about $100 worth of stuff. And we looked at what we were going to have to buy. And in past trips lately, especially, we've talked about it, you use a credit card for almost everything. So we thought we had enough. So we went on this boat ride while we were still in Mexico City, which was catered by restaurants and other boats that came up to you on the river, and you ordered what you wanted to eat, and they delivered it to you, and then they came back to be paid. And when we went to pay for our delicious
lunch,
the owner of the restaurant boat turned up her nose and made a face and said something kind of angry to us that we didn't understand, which was, where did you get these old notes? These aren't worth anything. We haven't used these for years. And we said, we're really sorry, but that's all we have.
I cleaned out my wallet. I had a credit card, but yeah. I didn't have any U.S. dollars because I changed it for pesos because we tried to use the local
I don't think she wanted
currency.
Dollars either.
But our, no, she,
and then
well,
we were in the middle of a river. There was just no
well,
way
with
around
a, we
it.
We were with a guided tour.
Yeah.
And the guide was there interceding, and he's the one who told us, this lady is, she wasn't angry, really. She was just confused about...
What the hell is this?
And frankly, the new peso as compared to the old peso to us looked the same. I mean, they probably had some security stripes or something on them.
They were slightly different size.
Slightly different.
But
we didn't know that because all of ours were the same size.
We had nothing to compare it to.
We had nothing to compare it to.
And maybe different pieces, faces of different prominent people at the time.
And then we come to find out that they changed to the new peso in...
1993.
So we had $100 in old pesos from 19... Well, it could have been sometime after that because they probably had a transition period. So it could have been within 5 years of that. But we don't remember exactly when we got these pesos.
And I remember going to Mexico since then, but we always used credit cards. We were in credit card places, not a problem. I probably brought my old pesos along and took them back in my Ziploc bag.
And so after some discussion with the guide and with the lunch provider, she said,
I'll just take them and foist them off on some other tourist. Who wouldn't know better?
Who wouldn't know any better? So,
international incident averted.
Well, not only that, but I had a wallet full. I had $100. I wasn't going to let those just sit there. So I had $100 in old pesos.
And I think we bought one other thing.
Yeah, we bought a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you got a vendor who comes to the window of the bus, and you hand them a bill and take the wallet or the...
I bought my head wreath.
Yeah.
A wreath of flowers for my head. Yeah.
So I don't know. Did we get free money?
Well, no, we bought it in the first place.
A long time ago.
A long time ago. Anyway. Not a good investment.
So I guess the bottom line here is, ladies and gentlemen, check your money before you bring it.
Because in the U.S., even if you've got old crappy bills, you can always spend them here.
Yeah,
We've been in places in Asia where they don't like to take the money if it looks damaged or tattered. They have trouble with that
sometimes.
Well,
U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
But, and you had this incident, where was it, in Denmark or something?
Right. That guide responded quite differently. He was thrilled to see them. They brought back all these old memories. He bought them all from us to give to his grandchildren.
Because he hadn't seen those notes in so long.
So you get different reactions. It's been fun. I will keep doing that. If nothing else, it's a good story at the other end.
Oh, boy. And we were totally innocent in this. I mean, we had no idea that this was going to be a problem. So,
and I'm thinking, even if I went online and looked at the new bills, a photograph of them wouldn't have helped me much.
Not really,
because you couldn't see the size.
They look pretty much the same to us.
Yeah.
And when we actually compared them, we did go to the bank and get some new notes. So now our envelope has new currency in it.
Yes.
Or did we spend it all?
No, I had a little left.
So our new note, so this is good for another 30 years until the new peso comes down.
The next time we go to Mexico.
Oh, boy. I think the value of the peso was about the same.
Yeah.
Right now, that's about 18 to the dollar.
Right.
So as I recall, they were in that
about
vicinity
that also.
Even then. So we probably didn't really make any money off this deal.
We read a lot about people who are taking tours, which may or may not include a flight. We are strong advocates of booking our own flight. Being in charge of our own fate. If something goes wrong, there's not a layer of bureaucracy you have to go through to make a change or get restitution. And we knew that our flight back to Orlando from Mexico had a very tight connection in Dallas.
No, and 2.5 hours is not tight.
After we booked it, they made it a little tighter. They changed the time of the departure of the Orlando flight. Be that as it may, when we landed, we knew that things were tight. We had never flown through Dallas before. We knew it was a big airport. We figured that wherever we needed to be wasn't anywhere near where we were starting.
Well, DFW is a big airport.
And we had to go through immigration because we were coming from Mexico back into the United States.
Yeah.
Then we had to pick up our luggage and resubmit it to the baggage handlers to be put on the next flight, because theoretically we're going through customs, although nobody really did that. And we had a long way to walk.
So let's back up with this just a little bit. The procedure when you come in from a foreign country and you have a connecting flight is that you get off the plane, you go through immigration, and then you go pick up your luggage.
In a baggage hall far away from immigration.
Which is typical. And then you take your luggage through customs, and if they want to check you, or you know that's where the dogs are and they smell you and that sort of stuff. And then you go to a second place where they're collecting all the luggage from all the flights, all the people. They're collecting the luggage and putting it on the domestic flight, supposedly. And that's a tenuous process. So
and
one of the things
that
we did was we were flying business class. So we were able to get off the plane immediately.
First.
And that also means when you do that, your luggage is priority.
So, ha ha. Continue.
Continue. So when we get to the immigration area, there was a line that was, I would say, well over an hour long.
Yeah.
But we have, and I hope all of you will
who
check
travel
into
internationally.
This. We have global entry, and we have pre-check. But global entry, which is $100, and for us it's paid for by the credit card. So we have global entry, which allows you to speed through the immigration process. And by what I mean by speed through, there was a line that was, as I say, you know, one of these zigzagging lines.
A Disney World line.
At least an hour long. And, you know, there are foreigners in that line. There's U.S. citizens. There's all sorts of people. And it was a crowded area.
There was a row of kiosks. No one was standing at them. We walked up to them. Each of us took a kiosk. It took our photograph. And then we didn't know quite what to do after that because there was no receipt.
There were no instructions.
There's no one to follow. And finally, an agent way down said, "Are you the Wiseman?" And we ran toward him gratefully, and he waved his hand and waved us through. We did not even take our passports out of our pockets.
Global entry got us to the front of the line is the only thing I can say. It was less than 30 seconds for us to go through immigration, which gave us a great deal of hope that we would be making our next flight.
So then we galloped, took a transfer shuttle train to the luggage pickup area. And then eventually the luggage came, as eventually luggage does, and we hauled it to the belt and put our two suitcases on right next to each other.
Exactly.
And finished our mile dash to the gate where our plane was waiting for us.
We had once again.
Because we had to go through security again.
We were out in the general public area,
right.
And we had to go through security again. And that was a fairly long line. And we had pre-check, so we were able to go through that line fairly quickly also. So those two things together, if you're a traveler who values time and is sometimes pressed for time, the pre-check and the global entry saved our bacon in this case.
We would have missed the plane without them.
We rushed down to the gate, and we were there less than 10 minutes before it
started boarding.
And we could have been there.
I know we disagree on this, but when we landed, I looked at my watch and calculated that we had an hour and 20 minutes to get all this stuff done. That's what I remember.
But the point being that we never would have made it had it not
without those
global entry and pre-check.
So to end the happy part of our story... Once we landed in Orlando, there were bad snowstorms going on further north, which did not affect us directly, but we encountered piles and piles and piles of suitcases sitting not on the belts, but next to them.
Yeah.
People didn't seem to be there who were looking for them or doing anything with them, but there were a lot of people standing around. And as we stood at our belt and waited for our luggage to come, I got a text on my phone that said, "One of your suitcases made it on the plane, but not the other one." And because
they texted us with
and
that.
Because they had the bag tagged in reverse of what we had, I thought Ken lost his suitcase, but lo and behold, it was mine. So if you have to lose a suitcase, I guess the best time to do it is on your way back, because I didn't really need any of the stuff that was in there.
We were just heading home.
But you always worry. I had an expensive camera in there because I was tired of lugging it around. And it's nice to get your own stuff back. So what to do? One of the choices that I had on the message on the airline app was, do you want to come back for your suitcase after it arrives, or do you want us to deliver it to you? And even now, in retrospect, I don't know if I chose the right thing, but I can tell you that I waited 4.5 days before the suitcase was finally here in my hands.
But
if we had gone back to the airport, we probably could have gotten it sooner.
Yeah, and in all honesty, we landed at midnight, and so the airport was very quiet. When we got off the plane, you know, there was nobody waiting to get on the plane, and we walked through all the stores were closed, but when we went down to the luggage area, it was like jam packed, and there was luggage everywhere, just sitting. I mean, not on the carousels, but just sitting, and only some of their carousels were in operation. So you can imagine that American Airlines was going to have a major issue with luggage because of the snowstorm, people getting off of cruises, people coming to cruises. I have no idea, but you knew there was going to be a huge luggage issue.
So the message I want to give to you, no matter what you decide to do when your bag gets lost, is that it's very valuable to have the app for that airline. They communicate with you constantly throughout the trip. They tell you when it's time to board. It's just a much better thing to have than that piece of paper old ticket that we used to rely on.
Yep, we're getting away from paper, aren't we?
Yes.
We used to kind of do paper as a backup, but now it's just not necessary. But we did have an AirTag in your luggage,
as
we have in all of our luggage.
I sat there and refreshed the Find My feature on that app multiple times throughout the four-day wait, and I knew exactly where the bag was, and theoretically I could have gone back.
And we did know that it was back in Houston.
Because American flew it right away the next day from Dallas to Orlando.
And we knew it had arrived in Orlando.
That. Yeah.
But it's a 40-minute drive to the airport to pick up the luggage, and we thought, what the heck, let's have them delivered. And they kept, we could see it there. We could see it at the airport, but it just sat there.
And I think they got overwhelmed by how many suitcases they had to deliver on this particular weekend. That made it worse.
And finally, after 4.5 days, it arrived by FedEx. They paid. I thought they would have some sort of a truck that would be out delivering luggage.
And I watched the FedEx man with my Find My app cruising around Titusville for most of the day. It was almost dark by the time he got here, but I knew where he had been every minute.
Yeah, you can really spy on the delivery guys. But, you know, if we had been flying to Orlando and we were going to be doing tourism things, going on a cruise or going to the Disneyland or the other amusement parks, you just wonder, what would you have done for 4.5 days waiting for your luggage to arrive? Almost time to go home.
And we had a car here that we could have driven back to the airport and gotten it. Yeah. You don't always have a car as a tourist either.
All sorts of problems. So I guess the AirTag really helped us with a peace of mind. It didn't really help us. We didn't really have to challenge anybody at the airport and say, yes, it is there. But if you don't have AirTags, it's time to buy ones because they have new AirTag 2s.
Oh, yeah. And the American Airlines app at one point said to me, do you have an AirTag? If so, send us its location.
And an identifier. I
was able to get a long sequence of numbers and letters.
Oh, really?
Like a URL on the browser. And I just copy and pasted that into the app. So I was helping them to find my bag, but it didn't help it to get here any sooner.
Anyway, if this jogs your interest in AirTags, Apple has introduced a brand new series of AirTags called the AirTags 2, which are really basically the same and the same price, but they have a little bit longer battery life and a little bit more accuracy in terms of being able to find them, and they have a louder buzzer, I guess. But understand that AirTags don't work unless somebody walks by with an iPhone. There can be long, and we did see this, there were long periods of time in Dallas, for instance. We didn't know whether the bags were on the flight or not. Frequently, you can see on the AirTag that the flight that your bag is with you, but neither one of our bags showed up, and it's undoubtedly because nobody with an iPhone had walked by our luggage.
It was crawling through the baggage.
Yeah.
In the airplane.
Well, I don't know what they were doing, but whatever they do. So my bag made it on the flight fine, and hers didn't. So that's
so
always
boo-hoo,
an issue.
But all is well now.
And we came back to
cold weather. We hate to complain because we do watch the weather forecast for other parts of the country.
And, but we hate to complain.
And we know that some of you all are really suffering. But let me say that here in Florida, we had 3 or 4 nights of well below freezing temperatures. And that does make a difference because any plant that grows happily in Florida is no longer happy after 3 or 4 days of below freezing temperatures. So our beautiful park here is filled with palm trees whose leaves have turned bronze colored. All of the orchids have died. It's really sad looking
around. And you drive down the roads and you just see brown, brown, brown everywhere.
So if you come to Florida anytime soon, you will probably see some vegetation that does not look very appealing. And now we are worried because it's so flammable and it's been rather dry here. And they're worried about having fires as well. So if you come to Florida soon and everything does not look as lush and jungly as you expect, that's the problem. And we've been advised not to do any pruning until the plants have a chance to show us what really is dead. So,
they say don't prune for a couple of months because some of the branches may come back or there may be some live cells underneath it that will rejuvenate themselves. And so it's going to remain brown around here for weeks. So if you're coming down for a spring break, you may notice that things very brown.
It'll look bad.
And of course, we've always been amazed at how fast stuff grows. I mean, we came down here after a couple of months being away, and the walkway into the front door was totally overgrown.
Covered over.
And it took
like Sleeping Beauty's castle.
But that's typical of Florida. But right now, things are not growing much at all, and the grass is really brown. And of course, if you're in a cold weather climate, you know what brown looks like.
And if you're coming down here in the winter as an RVer, you probably have some warm winter clothes because you're wearing them when you leave home. But if you are coming down here to take a cruise or go to Disney World, make sure you have a pair of gloves and a hat and an extra layer because it could be cold here, especially in January.
Yeah, it's always we get a few days of cold. And, you know, days when it doesn't reach 70, which is a day of cold, a weather action day by the local.
We're talking about cold. We even talked about should you have put antifreeze in the motorhome during the
This was the coldest it's been in almost
19
years,
they said, yeah.
So it was pretty cold. And we're finding out that our house is not designed for heat. It's designed for air conditioning. We have a heat pump, and I'm not used to heat pumps. Heat pumps air conditioners that can go in reverse.
All the people who listen to us that are south of the Mason-Dixon line, that's what they use, too.
Yeah, but I'll be interested to know, because our house here in Florida, all of the registers are in the ceiling, which for us is very unusual. So the cold air comes in through the registers in the ceiling and sinks down.
To where we are.
Whereas at home, our registers are in the floor, and the heat, which is the primary thing you do, the heat is going up, so the registers are in the floor so that it circulates the heat that way. Whereas this house, we cannot keep the living area warm because all the hot air goes up.
And the
registers up above, even though the heat pump is putting out hot air, the air is staying high.
And we do have some paddle fans, but they're not enough.
So people are saying, boo-hoo, Ken and Martha, you're...
Yeah.
These are definitely first world problems. Anyway, we took a trip to IKEA.
A lovely store.
You know, I saw that for the first time, IKEA was a vendor at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in January. And the reason why they were there is because they have a whole range of inexpensive home automation tools. And wow, They do. And so we bought a few things that we can add to home automation. The big thing in home automation these days is called Matter. And that word indicates that it is interoperable between devices.
Is that an acronym or a name of a company?
No, it's not. It's a open source standard that anybody can use so that devices from different companies can be controlled by the same controllers. And IKEA has gone big time into
lights.
Lights and actually all sorts of things. They have water sensors. They have temperature sensors. They have a wide variety of different things. Actually, we found a whole section in the IKEA store that was home automation equipment. And frankly, I know more about it now than I did when I was there, so I didn't look at everything that I should have looked at.
Uh-huh.
But about $5, you can buy yourself a Matter-enabled light that you could screw into any socket.
When we went shopping for drapes or curtains, you can buy them, of course, automated, too. You've certainly seen the Hollywood films where the villain presses a button and all the shades go up and you see the beautiful view of the Hollywood Hills. Those are controlled by these Matter hubs as well?
Yes,
can be?
Can be. And as a matter of fact, we kind of shocked the salesperson at the...
Who hadn't heard of Matter.
The curtain store. And I said, I'm not buying anything automated that doesn't include Matter. And he said, Matter? What the hell's that? And he went and looked it up online, and his devices were Matter accessible.
As usual, Ken is the first one on the block.
Well, if I'm going to buy home automation stuff,
sure.
If we want our lights to turn on in conjunction with each other, I don't want to have different remote control sensitive. You got so many remote controls that you
and
just
different
can't.
Apps
yeah.
and it's
yeah,
just
different
too
apps,
complicated.
Right? So Matter is the thing to think about and make sure that your any devices that you want to buy.
Now we're talking to RVers. Is this something that's applicable
Absolutely.
To them too?
No problem there at all. But you need a hub or something. But I don't know, you could do it in the RV. Any place. I mean, it controls all sorts of devices.
So you could put your curtains up or down. Well, some of the RVs come that way.
Well, yes, but
and you
that's
control
the problem
it from an iPad.
Is that they're proprietary.
Right.
And you have to have the company's
right.
app, and
right.
you have to have their devices, and you can't say, oh, you guys don't make this device, and I want to put in a light. But sorry, we don't make lights, so too bad you can't use their system, so you have to buy another system. But the bottom line here is that IKEA has decided that home automation is something that they want to get into. And this article I have is 20 gadgets worth buying from IKEA that are all Matter controlled.
So do you think they'll drive the market over here? I mean, I'm sure they'll be...
They will...
They'll drive the market in Europe, I would think. But.
Right. But IKEA is just jumping on the bandwagon that has already left.
There are other universal hubs?
Oh, tons.
Oh,
Matter is big. No, this is not, Matter is not an IKEA thing.
It's not proprietary to them.
And that's the whole part about this. This is that Matter. Apple has signed on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Google has signed on to
mm-hmm.
it. And so all of the big companies have signed on to Matter as their fundamental way of controlling
making
devices.
Things turn on and off.
Yeah. Saves company from having to come up with a proprietary gizmo that is controlling everything. They can just say it's Matter. We'll make the light, but we don't have to make the controller. And so it should drive down the prices and make home automation. And, for instance, our new thermostat will be Matter.
And for those of us who have a hard time mastering these control systems, it's nice to know that once you've mastered
right.
it, you can do the stuff you want to do.
Right. It's like an operating system. And people to make apps that work with that operating system, and so you can use them.
We've mentioned one of our listeners, Betty Chambers, and her new venture called RVing with Bikes a while ago when she first started with this, and we want to mention it again because she has now come out with an app for her product and a book as well. I really want to promote what she's doing. I think it's a wonderful idea. We've been to a few campgrounds that you could ride your bike right out of, and that is so wonderful because you don't have to lug your bike around, put it in or out of a car, put it up on a Lyft, whatever it is you're doing to bring your bikes along. And with her app, you can go to the campgrounds that she has listed, and it shows you a lot of information about the campgrounds because it interfaces with other mm-hmm. software that is already in existence. And if you are going to really make use of it, I think there are 3 free samples, and then you can subscribe, which is the right thing to do. Right. This was a lot of work for her, and she's always adding new campgrounds as she discovers them. I don't remember if it said how many. But we're going to enclose the link about her app from her blog post that she wrote that talks about the process that she went through to do the app with the help of her young son, how her app will work. So any of you who are bike riders and RVers, I'm sure would love to have this product. Kudos to you, Betty.
We hope to get out and actually go to some of the places as
we haven't had a chance to use it ourselves.
Yeah. Let's see. This jogs my memory about another problem that we had on the trip. Well, not that we had, that somebody else had. Their charger for their iPhone, and a lot of thrashing around about charging phones. And I would strongly suggest, as I will put a link into our notes, into the webpage, and of course you know that all of our links are available to you on our episode webpage at rvnavigator.com, and this is episode 251 for March 2026. And there are a couple devices here that I found that are small that will allow you to charge multiple devices. Now, this is not a wire. This is for your wirelessly charged phone and your watch and your headphones. So one device plugged in with one wire will charge all 3 devices. And it folds down into a very small and compact shape so that it could be easily transported. And you know, one of the things that we do is that you can turn your iPhone into an alarm clock. Did you know that?
And you can wake up during the night and peer at it and see what time it is. Because it's lights up.
So you put your iPhone into horizontal mode and put it into sleep, and it will turn into a clock. And you put this on the stand, and so it's charging, and it's also acting as a alarm clock and calendar, and you can have it display a number of different things. But one of the nice things is that it displays the time in very large letters that take up the whole screen, if you want it to. It has a number of different modes. And this device, the stand, will also charge your watch and your headphones, which is also very nice.
As long as they're Apple products.
I don't think this is proprietary to Apple. I think other devices
can be charged. And it's not Matter either.
No, this is a dumb device. So I'm going to put up a link to 2 devices. One is just a standalone, and you have to plug it into the wall. The second one is a charger that will charge all 3 devices simultaneously, but it has a battery and is also very small. The battery probably will not charge it too many times, but it would certainly get you through the night and provide you with a decent amount of power for charging your devices. So I think these are pretty cool devices.
I think I plugged my iPad into one when I while
it iPad. Has yes, it has a port so that you can plug in USB-C and then plug it into something else.
Something bigger, but then it would get exhausted.
But this battery
faster.
Is the designed size of the a pack phone. Of cigarettes, so that it's not very big.
And it's designed to be used with your phone.
It's designed for smaller devices like your phone, your watch, and your headphones.
I want to talk about one more thing because it is timely. Because of the political situation in our world these days, it's very obvious to us down here in Florida that fewer Canadians are joining us here this year. Many used to come for months, built friendships, returned to the same RV parks year after year. Their arrival was as predictable as the seasons themselves, but the KOA has reported that 60% of Canadian snowbirds planning to spend a month or more in warm climates are choosing international destinations outside the U.S.
Ooh.
While 43% still plan to stay in campgrounds in the U.S., many of those stays won't be with us. I know that the politicians in Florida are worried about the loss in tax income from the lack of tourists in this area. What a shame.
And we certainly notice that here in Florida, that without the Canadians, things are much calmer. And sales of properties here is not
way
going
down.
Very well.
Way down.
We appreciate having the Canadians here. And
we miss you.
Huh?
We miss you.
We miss you. That's right. And we hope that you come back. It's not us that are keeping you away, but we're not being very friendly, so, as a country. We hope that that takes care of itself in the not-too-distant future. So, ladies and gentlemen, the month is over, and we are ready to head into March, which is springtime. I don't have to dewinterize, but you might want to think about it in the not-too-distant future. And we hope that you get on the road, and you might see us, because in March, we're not going to be leaving. But at the very end of March...
We are leaving.
And not until March 30th.
And then we're going to be in another campground, which
you
may
be in
as well.
We're going to be in another campground near you on March 30th. But we leave Florida for the heading north in our motorhome, which will be all spiffed up, and it'll be waxed, and it'll be clean. This year, living in a house and having the motorhome just here...
Next to us,
it gives us a chance to really... do some deep cleaning and some repairs and things that we wouldn't probably be able to do when we're living in it. Like, for instance, we couldn't have had it painted for 17 days if we didn't have it another place to live.
We would have had to sleep in the paint bay.
Sleep in the paint bay. Now, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
And even because we are lazy people, the proximity of it makes it much more likely that we will go over there and tweak something or clean something or use something.
But we've spent a fair amount of time duplicating things because we want to have the house complete in case we come down without the motorhome, and we don't want to take stuff out of the motorhome that we would...
Who knows? We're still
figuring it out. We'll
probably
head north and we'll be minus some things, but you'll hear about that.
Whether you want to or not.
I would guess. We tell you everything else, so we may as well talk about our disasters with moving in and out. With that said, we will turn it over to next month, and we'll hope to see you in episode 252, which will be in March, and we will be looking forward to spring and on the road is... Oh, probably have to make that a podcast just a bit early because we wouldn't want to...
Don't give away all of our secrets.
So we
thank you very much for listening to us. We hope that you have a chance to get on the road soon.
And share your stories with us. Send us an email. We always like to hear from you guys.
Stay healthy. Stay happy.
Yep. Talk to you later. Bye now.